And welcome to Geek Actually, episode 52 for the 19th of September 2009. 52, that's 1 year's worth of episodes.
Woo-hoo!
Even though we're past our birthday a couple of weeks ago. But that's now 1 year's worth of episodes, and people tell me that's the bigger milestone. So here we are. My name is David McVeigh, and you are listening to Geek Actually, the weekly podcast really about nothing at all, where we sit there and rant on for an hour and a half or so, hopefully being entertaining. I am joined in studio this week by my regular co-host, Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh? Oh, that's not Josh. That's Josh. There you are. How are you today, Josh?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the new camera angle. I'm not so much enjoying the giant slow Mac that I'm being forced
to
use.
Even that giant slow Mac is probably still faster than your little one.
So, it isn't.
Them spotting words.
That voice you're hearing is Katrina Smith. Hello, Katrina.
Hello.
Are you?
I'm good.
We've been trying to do slightly more detailed introductions over the last couple of weeks because we realize we're getting a whole bunch of new viewers lately. And so they probably don't know who you are, Katrina, because you haven't been on for a couple of weeks now. So we'll just say that Katrina is an actress, a stand-up comedian, a writer, and we refer to her as Miss Katrina because she can get very analytical on us sometimes.
Yes. Can I just show you a bit of suffering for my art?
Sure.
I had to act on Monday at a hospital as paying a patient. They put a clear thing over a pretend wound, and when they tore it off, they just ripped all of the skin down there. So I look like for most of the week I've been in a knife fight in a bar, but really I hadn't. So taking it in the neck for your art.
Well, there you go. Very cool. All right. We actually have a really, really, really crowded show today. So we're going to pretty much fly through a lot of this quickly because we tend to get sidetracked, especially when Katrina is in the house.
That's my function.
Absolutely. On today's show, we've got Left 4 Dead 2 has been banned in Australia. We'll come back to that story. Don't start, Josh. Google and Microsoft go head-to-head on visual search. Skype founders are now suing eBay for a patent infringement. It seems like suing for patent infringements is the go-to activity of Silicon Valley at the moment. The Australian federal government is breaking up Telstra, which whether or not they actually are going to do it or not, we'll find out. But that's their threat. We have more Green Hornet news, Josh. I can't do a show without Green Hornet news, it would seem, for the last 3 weeks in a row. Silent Hill 2 is moving forward for the fans of that film and computer game. The Harvey remake may have a star, and later on we are going to review Pixar's latest effort, Up. And yes, I know we've been promising that for a few weeks, so we're finally at Up. Blame Australian releasing, and we'll come back to that in a little bit more details. But first, we have a little section that we like to call Go Us. I'm going to have to create a bumper for that with like applause and whistles.
So
like first of all, we have two new iTunes reviews on the Australian iTunes store. Thank you very much to ZombieKid101, who gives us 5 stars and says, great show, interesting topics, a must for gamers, geeks, and film buffs. The host is amazingly knowledgeable. And that Josh guy, what a sexy voice. I'd listen to that dude read the phone book.
Oh,
take that, negative feedback person.
Stick it up. You're all right.
We also have feedback from Rags58, who is actually in our chat room today. Hello, Rags58.
Hello.
Although I think in the chat room you're using a different
Pseudonym,
Red Robin, in the chat room.
Yeah.
She says, I love this podcast. Although I was only initially in it for the film news, I now find that through the articulate and well-thought-out tech news presentation, I'm actually hearing words that make sense instead of just quote-unquote, and so we want to bring you the news on the latest blah-blah-blah PC blah-blah, and then the blah-blah is really a really useful platform blah-blah-blah. Thanks to you, I am really starting to understand what is happening in the tech world instead of nodding sagely and pretending. David and Josh make it accessible to the average listener. Josh, I love your accent. Are a god with a little g. I also love all the presenters. Each one of them has a wonderful perspective to add to the mix. Mira and Katrina and Sarah, not to mention Little Geek. Love yous all. Keep up the great work, people. Thank you very much for that. And we also have, oh, no, before I go on to the other feedback, which is general feedback, if you want to put a feedback for us on iTunes, you have to do it in your individual country, obviously. We have lots of international listeners because each store is individual and we want feedback across the board. We still haven't had the UK or Canada feedback. I'd love to have those. The feedback actually helps us move up the ranks on iTunes and gets us onto the featured list. We actually managed to bounce up into page 3 of the featured list for about half an hour this week. Wow. And then we dropped off completely and then we came back to page 4. So we jump around all over the place. So we are obviously sitting right on the cusp. We're fighting for our position. So please, go to iTunes. All you have to do is drop in a rating or a quick word just to say thank you. Or, you know, all I say about the iTunes one, if you want feedback where you want to be negative towards us, like you want to criticize something on the show, send that directly to us. We will read it off. We have no problem with negative feedback. Yes. It's just the iTunes stuff stays there forever. And it really, it's more of a general over thing than just a specific episode thing. Mm. So try and do it as a general show thing. If you have episodic criticism, send that to feedback@geekactually.com. We'll read it out on air, and we'll deal with it. We're big boys. We can take negative feedback. It's just when it gets personal.
No.
And I just realized
she's not a big boy.
I just realized that in the background you'll hear this slight hum, and I know that Ben at Ben's Tech Show has a real problem with hum. That is actually not a hum on a DC hum. If you look in the camera, you'll actually see I left the fan running. So we will just turn that off. There you go. That'll make a nice cleaner audio for everybody. So from this point onwards, the fan is now off. Okay, so feedback@geekactually.com. We have one from Ben. This one is actually for Sarah. 2 weeks ago we said if you want Sarah to stay on the show, please send us your feedback to let us know if you want Sarah to stay on the show, because for those who have been listening regularly, you'll know that Sarah has moved back to Melbourne and we're trying to get her to come back here, okay, and be a regular on the show. Well, Ben has written and said, also tell Sarah, I had a personal email, that's why the also, he says, tell Sarah she gave me the quote-unquote man chills. The kind men get after taking a pee when she eat the mic on the last show. Laugh out loud. And it also says, P.S. Tell your mother she needs to get her butt back to Sydney so she can be on the show. So, Ben is a big long-term fan. You can find out more about Ben at benstechshow.com. Thank you very much for your comment, Ben. We also have this piece of feedback from Bill Canada. Or Bill, and Bill says, hi guys, you asked for feedback if you should keep Sarah in the show or not, and I say yes. If she isn't willing to move closer to you guys, try using Skype. Other podcasts I listen to, /Filmcast, /Filmcast, guys, use that exclusively, and it sounds pretty good to me, just my 2 cents worth. I would love to do that, but Sarah is bandwidth impaired in Melbourne, and she also doesn't have a headset. It's much easier just to get
and
her
more
into the studio.
And more importantly, we want her here.
Absolutely.
There's we need her visually.
There is an energy to having Sarah in the studio that is very nice. Now, I have 2 last feedbacks here. These actually lead on to other stories, so we'll come back to those ones. This is just a quick one. This is actually from Rags58 or Red Robin or whatever pseudonym she's using today. This was actually some feedback from her just about a particular topic. She said, hi, David. Just wanted to let you know that I downloaded the new update for iTunes and took the opportunity to leave some comments on the page, which we got. Thank you very much. This morning, I found that I couldn't even get into Geek Actually through the upgraded iTunes website with the whole new format, which is stupid, by the way, and they have removed the shopping cart facility. I know that I am a quote-unquote PC, but I couldn't even get into Geek Actually this morning to see if my feedback was there. I don't know what they are doing, but they are most certainly impenetrable. I would agree with you. I think the new iTunes design is clumsy on iTunes 9. It does, I've actually responded to Robin personally, but it does actually work better on a Mac because Apple writes their software for Macs. Obviously, the PC version of it sucks. Now, Apple needs to correct this because the majority of their iTunes users are PC users.
So just quickly, when you say that, do you when you
it's
mean clumsy,
slow,
is it slow?
It's sluggish.
What I was worried about.
It takes a long time to load. It's a very clumsy, bloated piece of software. And on the PC, on the Mac, it runs really, really smoothly. But on the PC, it runs really clunkily. And I know that with iTunes 8, I think it was, our local coffee shop guy bought himself an iPhone, plugged in his iPhone, and his entire system crashed. So not good on Apple's part. Apple's actually having a few problems at the moment with their PC side of stuff. It's the same thing with Safari. Safari is an awesome web browser on the Mac. The PC Safari is a piece of shit. It's as simple as that, you know. So anyway, we're moving on. So, yes, I feel your pain. Apparently there are websites. If you do a bit of web searching, you can actually backgrade. There are websites that actually hold the old installers if you want to go back to iTunes 8. The only problem is that what Apple does is they put functionality, of course, into the browser that you will no longer have. So it's a bit of a problem. It's a bit of a double-edged sword. They need to fix it. Now, we also have this piece of feedback from last week. We read this last week. Which says, "Hi guys, love the show. Just wondering if you've ever done the movie review on Will Smith's 7 Pounds. I'd love to hear what your review, what you thought of the movie. He thought it was the worst movie he'd seen in 20 years. Okay, I finally watched 7 Pounds. I think I'm the only one who's seen 7 Pounds.
No, I haven't seen it.
I'm refusing to. I know the ending, so it's a bit like the whole, what is it? I See Dead People. Help me out here.
Seven Signs? Sixth Sense?
Sixth Sense, thank you. Yeah, it's the whole Sixth Sense thing. If you know the ending, it's just, yeah. There's nothing in it worth watching.
And Katrina, your opinions on this? Why didn't you never see it? Why didn't you go see it? Reasons?
Financial, I suspect. mind you, I don't know what the big secret about it is, but a friend of mine who's a therapist as well, an occupational therapist, said, "I think it means blah." So when you've done your review, I'll... Okay,
we're going to do this as a mini review because we have so much to do today. It is actually not our feature review for today, but all I'm going to say is that I did watch it. First, I will sum this up by telling you my experience with watching it. I put the DVD on. 1 hour into the film, I fell asleep. It literally put me into a coma. The next day, I came out that I got to watch the second half of this, but then realized that I actually didn't understand what was going on to that point, so I had to rewatch the first 20 minutes of the film. Then when I finally caught on, I went, oh, now I understand. I then fast-forwarded to the hour point and watched the rest of it, and all I can say is that this is a film with complete mixed messages. I understand kind of what the filmmaker was going for, but look, guys, spoilers for 7 Pounds. If you haven't seen 7 Pounds by now, I don't think you're going to. So the bottom line is it's about a guy who is trying to redeem his life after having a car accident, killing 7 people by giving a gift to 7 people to improve their lives. But the gift that he wants to give, and we won't go into complete spoilers, but the gift he wants to give, I completely look at and go, boy, you are the most selfish bastard that walk the earth, because you don't understand that the effect of giving these gifts to these people is also going to have an emotional toll to it, and I think it's completely misguided in every way, and I thought that the film was actually boring as batshit, and I don't recommend it to anybody. But I also didn't like Pursuit of Happiness, which is the
which I find interesting.
The same director.
As much as I sat through that and got to the end and went, wow, I'd never watch that film again, I didn't think it was bad.
Oh, high praise indeed.
No, there's films that can be really good and you go, that was really good, never sitting through it again. I agree.
A perfect example is I saw The Boy in Striped Pajamas recently.
I want to see that.
Exactly,
yeah.
But emotionally, it drained me to a point where I would never watch that film again.
Oh, okay, I see it.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, it's one of those films that's very emotional, it's very intense, and that's the reason I'd never watch it again.
Fair enough. Well, and look, you know, and there is a possibility that other people watch 7 Pounds. If you go to IMDb at the moment, it's got like 8 out of 10 and people saying one of the greatest films ever made. I don't get it. I looked at it and I just went, spoilers for 7 Pounds. If you don't want to know about the ending of 7 Pounds, just on the audio podcast, skip ahead for 2 minutes. If you're listening live, just take your headsets off for a second.
La, la, la.
One of the gifts he's going to give is to Rosario Dawson, who I think was the best thing in the film, by the way. I think Rosario Dawson did a wonderful job. She's got a heart condition, and so he's going to give her his heart. Right?
My friend picked that it was organ donor.
Oh, yeah, he's organ donating everything, right? So he wants to give her his heart. But he inadvertently, as he goes along, falls in love with Rosario Dawson. And they build this point where they're absolutely in love with each other, and on the night that they consummate their love, he gets up, goes to the phone, calls his friend, says, "Let's do this," and kills himself so that she can have the heart. Well, that's actually going to damage her more than if she was going to die. She's now not only has a heart condition, and his heart doesn't necessarily mean it's going to 100% accept, you know, and everything else.
Is it a match? Yeah.
You know, well, it's a match because he's a rare blood type, so is she, and all this sort of stuff. But the point is that now she's going to be heartbroken for the rest of her life.
Also, like, can I just say the emotional trauma of having, like, someone that you fell in love with
kill himself?
No, not only the kill himself part, to actually have his heart inside you. That is a constant, like, state of being. It is there inside you.
Also, can I just...
Jesus!
And this film has just got so many problems like this. Now, just for the chat room, I only counted 6. Now, I think I may have missed something, but he gave his lung to his brother. He gave part of his liver to somebody else. He gave his eyes to Woody Harrelson, his heart to the girl. He gave his house to another woman, and he gave a bone marrow transplant to a boy. right?
You only got kidneys.
I don't think he gave his kidneys.
But you got two lungs. Maybe you count it as two for the lungs.
Maybe that should just went on the
But what I'm saying is, in the film, they only really address six, and he's supposed to be doing seven. And I don't know who the seventh was. Does anybody in the chat room, if you've seen it, does anybody know what the seventh one was? I don't understand what the seventh one was. But of course, he also, in the process, destroyed his brother's career because he stole his brother's ID, posing as an IRS agent, and as his brother says, they track everything that goes through. So, of course, all these things he's been doing, illegally tracking these people down through the IRS, his brother has to now contend with. So he's obviously destroyed his brother's career. There are so many problems with this film. All right. So, yes, what's your name again? Scott in Brisbane. Sorry, I forgot your name for a second there. Scott in Brisbane, I agree with you. I don't think it is a very good film at all. I don't think it's the worst film I've seen in the last 20 years, but I've seen a lot of really bad films. I watched Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus the other day. So, I've seen some pretty awful films, but I didn't think it was a particularly good film. All right, last piece of feedback, and this is going to lean us straight into the gaming news today. This was the reason why I bring this feedback up is because this is how we found out about this piece of news. It says, "Hey, David. It's Brad from Movie Fan House." Now, if you haven't listened to Movie Fan House, it is a fun podcast, moviefanhouse.com. It's two fans who just review films, and it's a lot of fun. Well worth having a listen to. You can get it on iTunes. He says, "Brad from Movie Fan House, just wanted to say that I'm really digging the show. Thank you very much. Your podcast has become my Sunday morning run podcast, so I have to thank you for that." Okay, verbal fellatio over.
Make sure you do the stretches. If we're in your ears, do your stretches properly.
He says,
and hydrate.
Then he goes on and says, "Please, spoiler American. I think he means spoiled American. As a spoiled American, why is Left 4 Dead getting banned in Australia? ?" I guess there are more censorship laws there. Please explain. Come, Dave, you are my Australian geek. I need you to come through for me on this one. Brad." Well, Brad, I got to tell you, I read your email.
We didn't know yet.
Let me just describe the circumstances. I went to visit Josh at work. And I said, "Josh, I'm going to go now. I'll see you later." Walked out the door, opened my iPhone, checked my mail, got that email. I was going down the escalator, went straight up the next escalator, went straight back to Josh Worker and said, "Read."
My God.
And I said, "I'll go research this." And sure enough, I have found some news. And it's actually now hit mainstream media.
The lives of about six or seven of my customers that day, thanks to that.
Yeah, message. Well, I've also destroyed the lives of Sarah, who's now in our chat room because she wants to talk about it. She says in the chat room, "The single greatest tragedy of the modern age." I don't know if I'd quite go that far.
Oh, I don't know. I'm close behind her on
this. It raises a whole bunch of issues, and we're going to tackle a few of these throughout the show because we've also got a little bit of tech news and stuff about this as well. But basically, according to the article on GameSpot, which I'm going to paraphrase because it's a long article, and we also post up some highlights from this on the geekactually.com site. Basically, it says here that GameSpot has received the official ruling from the classification board. The refusal largely focuses on the board's interpretation of the game's violence, finding that the game contains realistic, frenetic, and unrelenting violence, which is inflicted upon the infected, quote-unquote, who are living humans infected with a rabies-like virus that causes them to act violently, close quotes. The ruling goes on to say that, however, it is the use of the melee weapons, such as the crowbar, axe, chainsaw, and samurai sword, and as Sarah will point out, and frying pan, that's just me adding the frying pan, which inflict the most damage. These close-in attacks cause copious amounts of blood spray and splatter, decapitations, and limb dismemberment, as well as locational damage where contact is made to the enemy, which may reveal skeletal bits and gore. According to this, it says, interestingly enough, a minority of the board is of the opinion that the violence is strong in playing impact and therefore warrants an MA classification with the consumer advice of strong violence, suggesting that the ruling was anything but unanimous amongst the board. But they have ruled it over MA, and being an over MA-rated game, it is refused classification because Australia is the only Western country in the world, which we have discussed many times on this show, that does not have an R rating for games. Our rating system mirrors the film and television rating system, GPGMMA, and stops. Films go on to R. Games, they were never gave the games an R rating because, of course, they believed that only children play video games, which is nonsense. And if you go back and listen to, we're not going to recap the whole thing. If you go back and listen to a whole bunch of our shows in the past, we've talked about this ad nauseum. The average age of a gamer today is about 26 to 30, and they want adult content. And there's no reason why there shouldn't be an restricted R 18 plus rating for games. The argument that the South Australian Attorney General puts forward is, oh, once it's in the house, the children might get it. But you have R-rated films in the house that the child might get. Mm. You know, there is, the argument is hypocritical and nonsense. It doesn't make any sense at all. Now, Katrina looks like she has something to weigh in on this.
No, I'm just asking. Obviously, as you know, I don't play games. I'm not a gamer. But I wonder, in yours and Josh's experience, is there actually a corollary of other games that has the same level of gore that's already out there?
There are many, many, many gory games out there, but a lot of them have been cut down for Australian audiences. Josh was telling me the example the other day, was it Resident Evil?
Mm.
Where they toned down the blood. Duke Nukem, going back into the 90s, Duke Nukem 3D had its gore level actually ramped down and actually had the things like the strippers and stuff censored, so you couldn't do it. Now it's available freely and openly, and there is no censorship on it. The problem is, with Left 4 Dead, this whole new melee system is new to the game.
Mm.
So to actually cut the new melee section out of the game basically cuts the entire game in half.
Right.
It takes away the gameplay. That's the entire concept of the new game, if I'm not wrong, is to add close quarters combat. Now, the game, you're fighting zombies, for God's sake. It's not like you're fighting humans. You know what I mean? They're zombies. It's a computer game. And, yes, I don't think Nicholas should be playing this game. You know, he's 10 years old. But if an adult who is going to go out and watch Dawn of the Dead or is going to go out and watch one of the films we're going to review today called Dead Snow, you know, there's no reason that adult shouldn't also be able to go out and rent and play this game. We're not saying that the children are going to get it. They're not going to be able to buy it retail because it's rated R, just like they're not going to be able to go see an R-rated movie. Yes, there will be kids who sneak it. Yes, there are going to be kids who sneak into the movies, you know? Yes, there are going to be kids who sneak it off their dad's shelf. There's nothing you can do to control that except parental control, you know?
Do you think this new function in any way... I mean, I'm not making a direct thing saying that if you're a bit unhinged and you play these games that you're going to become more unhinged.
No.
I'm asking, do you think that this new melee function somehow has a bigger payoff for somebody that would in fact be a bit disturbed?
No,
see, there's actually, I don't see, I'm once again, I don't buy into the entire argument that violent games or violent movies breed violence. I actually feel, and many psychologists feel the same way, that violent games and violent movies actually can reduce violence. There was a great comment actually made by Jeffrey Wright, who directed Romper Stomper. I went to see him. I used to know Jeffrey quite well. We used to do Radio 3AW together. And I went to see him at one of these popcorn taxi type things many years ago when Romper Stomper came out. And somebody actually said that exact same question. Don't you think films like Romper Stomper breed violence? And he goes, no. He goes, boredom breeds violence. He goes, kids wandering the streets having nothing to do or coming out of a boring film or whatever it is they're doing are the ones who go vandalize phone boxes.
Hmm.
You know? And he goes, the ones who go to a movie like Romper Stomper, they get that adrenaline run. They get all that through their systems. They go out satisfied that they have actually had all of that array. They don't need to go out and then beat somebody up. And a lot of psychologists believe this. They believe that it's a replacement for that. They actually see video games, for instance. They go out there. I have never met yet somebody who goes, oh, I've just gone and beaten up zombies in a video game. I feel like going out and beating up somebody on the street.
To a further example, to a further level on that, I will tell you that 90% of gamers, even the ones that talk big or say things like, I'm going to go home and, you know, cut up 1,000 zombies or whatever, you will find most of those people are not the violent types.
No.
It's all internal. It's like the same.
If somebody is, put it this way, the argument has always been, if somebody is damaged enough that a violent game or a violent movie or a violent piece of literature or a news article is going to set them off to go and create a massacre or go out and beat people
no.
up. If you didn't have the game, it will be something else that will set them off. They've already got that disposition.
I understand that point. I'm not saying that it would make them do it. I suppose what worries me when, you know, take Hostel and all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. I worry when a disturbed mind gets a new idea. You know what I mean?
Okay, but once again,
we have that
argument, though, which is that one bad apple shouldn't spoil the batch. You
no,
know what
no,
I mean?
I'm not.
And if you've got one person with a disturbed mind who sees Hostel and does something bad because of it, does that mean that the other 650 million people who go see it have to not be able to see it because that one person...
And also it? The comment you make isn't really... it doesn't really work towards this because this isn't stuff we haven't seen before.
That was my first question. Yeah. I said, did this game actually have anything particular? New out of the box, but another game. That was my very first.
But but not even that. It may be the first game that we've seen where you can actually hack parts off a zombie, but this isn't the first time we've seen zombies have bits hacked off them, like in movies and so on.
No,
no,
I've seen many zombie movies.
Exactly. So, I mean, like, in that respect, I think that, yeah, that's one thing that I would say, is that there's just, like, this isn't new stuff. It's just that it's the first time it's done in Left 4 Dead.
Sarah in the chat room is basically saying free and responsible adults should get to make the choice for themselves.
Okay, I'm sorry, I've been waiting patiently.
Sure, go for it.
I'm going to let rip on this. Number one, let's start by explaining that 70% of people that play Left 4 Dead 2 will be playing it on PC, right?
Yes.
Now, if we're going to play that on PC, right, Steam accounts have age restrictions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can set that sort of a thing. So not everyone can buy this game, bar people over a certain age group, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's implement number one to help with this sort of situation. Number two, if people are going to play this game that are over 18, that means someone's bought it for them. So how is that my problem as a responsible adult? Like, I mean, I run a video game store, and no one under 15 gets to buy these games at my store. So if someone's selling it, then that's a legal problem. That's not my problem. Okay, that's someone selling it to an underage.
Mm-hmm.
If an adult's buying it for them, that's not my problem. Okay, so why... I mean, we've done this argument so many times, but what it comes down to is I think this is the first time in the gaming industry that we are actually getting a game banned. There is no way to save this mainstream game because we can't remove this stuff. Okay, we've had a few before. We had GTA... It was a small
Let's
scene.
Not forget that the original Postal, the Postal 1, was banned in Australia.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah. I was in New Zealand at the time. But I'm talking recent mainstream
games. Yeah, you guys
games.
Got it because you have an R rating for games.
Exactly. But okay, let's come back to Australia. Okay. Now, in the recent times, we've had GTA 4, right?
Yep.
Massive uproar, but ended up getting subsided because game got released in the end. One scene kind of missing. That was about it. No one cared. We moved on. Fallout 3 almost gets banned, everybody kicks up a massive stink, then we find out that they're just changing the names back to the original names that they were in the first ones. No one cares, because we all remembered that fondly anyway. We didn't want Heroin instead of Jet or whatever, you know, we were happy with the game's original names. This is the first game where there is no way to save the classification rating on it. We can't pull it off, because... We can't pull out the gameplay aspect, otherwise the game's the same as the last one, and we would have to have an entirely different version, which would be an Australian version. And we can't cut the violence, because that voids the point of the game. I mean, the only thing they could do is make it so the hitbox still do the damage, but no parts fall off the people.
Yeah.
And that's assuming they'll let us do that.
Yeah.
That's assuming that'll cut through.
Well, what they're saying, we actually had just... Sarah has a Facebook... conversation going about this on her Facebook account. Some guy from Germany is debating her on this, and basically said that in Germany, a lot of these games, they turn the blood green, and they get around it by modifying the game. So it's not actually modifying the gameplay, but they modify the game. You know.
But remember, in Sin City, there was those whole sections of that where the blood wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and Kill Bill is another example. That scene during the sword fight in Kill Bill, it only goes black and white because it was a matter of getting the difference in rating. It was going to get banned by
but
the American censors.
The thing is that this won't work because the point is we're doing damage models that will have bones sticking out and bits actually coming off people.
Mm.
And this is the bit that they're not letting it fly through with. And how do we fix that? If we do get an Australian version of this, we're not going to be able to play against American players.
No, because we'll have a different...
Because we'll have a different version of it. We kind of did it at one stage with the old version. There was a cut version of Duke Nukem, which actually had parts removed from it. So they were still there, they just weren't visually there. Like the strippers and so on and so forth were just removed visually from the screen. You couldn't see them. And that was the way that they got around that, because you could still play even overseas, but you can't do that with this. You could try and create some system with the hitboxes, like I was saying, but then again, is that really going to make people happy?
Okay, this also raises a different issue as well, and this different issue is something we brought up on the show. I think it was way back, one of the first ones that you were on, Josh, if we go back. Where Stephen Conroy, our beloved communications minister, actually said that he wanted to expand the internet censorship filter to include gaming sites. Because, of course, the immediate reaction on our forum, if you go to geekactually.com/forum, there is a posting about this. Our immediate reaction from some people was, well, hey, it doesn't matter, we'll just buy it on Steam.
Mm.
Well, if Stephen Conroy gets his way, Steam will actually be banned in Australia. Because Steam is technically unrated, and being unrated game content, we will lose access to Steam. And we will also lose access to World of Warcraft, we will also lose access to Second Life, we will also lose access to all of the online gaming champions, things, because they don't technically carry an Australian rating. If they don't carry an Australian rating, the internet censorship filter will block them. All of this can be solved in one...
Get a rating.
All this entire debate can be solved in one fell swoop, which is to get an R rating.
Yeah.
If we can get an R rating, then games can get released for adult content for the adult gamers who are the majority of the market, etc., etc. Now, there is a website that you can do something about, okay? Sarah has put us onto this. Can you read out the address for us, Josh?
Okay, it's http://www.r18games.com.au/help.
All right, I'm going to create a lower third for that, I think. Let's have a look here. Give me a second. I will try and create a lower third here. So what is the purpose of that site? Can you fill people in a little bit on that? Give me that address one more time. It's forget the HTTP. Everybody knows that part.
Don't worry. It's coming on screen in a set.
So it's R18+.
I don't think it's plus, man. It's just r18games.
games.com.au. Okay, I'm bringing this up on screen for those who need it. Here we go. And we'll put that on manual. We'll just leave that on screen for a little while. r18games.com.au. Now, the site is actually a public service site. Yeah? Now, what it is, it's form letters and... Okay, it's basically what the site is... a site that was designed to help try and promote to all of the attorneys general and to the government the change in policy to allow an R rating for games. What the site actually has on it is it has form letters, it has the addresses of all these people and so forth. And all you really have to do is cut and paste one of these form letters, fill in your name, and send it off. It really requires no effort at all. The standout person, for those who have not been following our podcasts or our blog posts about this or anything, is named Michael Atkins. Atkinson. Yeah. Sorry, Michael Atkinson, who is the South Australian State's Attorney General. He is the one standout. He is the man who is holding up the change to this classification, because to get a new rating in with our censorship board, it requires a consensual agreement between all the state's attorneys general. Everybody else has agreed that an 18 rating for games is necessary, except him. And he has, we've done quotes from him and everything else, and he is a waste of space.
Look, I understand. I think informed adult choice is important. I think that it should have run parallel with the film industry. But I can tell you, I've worked in the public service around a range of things. They can't get consistency about huge, important legislation that goes across, when you go across multiple states, it's called cross-jurisdictional. They can't get people to agree about basic safety stuff. Mm. So I'm not raining on your parade. Get people to ride in for sure. But it's very hard to get people in different states to agree on something, because it's always a power trip.
Yeah, but all we have to do is get him to agree.
Yeah, because it's pretty much everyone across the board has accepted it and agreed with it.
He's
a South Australian
attorney
general.
So you really need to appeal to the South Australians.
Yeah, so all of our South Australian listeners, get
because
in there
he won't
writing.
Give a shit what someone in another state thinks. I'm sorry, it's a fact. You need to get the South Australians motivated.
And look, the biggest problem here is also getting geeks motivated. This was brought home to us.
More to the point, actually, Dave, I want to warn anyone that is doing things, because, if you go to the forum, there is also the email address for his actual, sort of email. I want to warn all geeks, because I know what we're like, okay? Passion is one thing, but be straightforward when you are making these arguments.
Do not write to him and say you're a fucking idiot.
I'm going to kill you or burn your house down or whatever. It doesn't help. It makes it worse.
I would actually say to you, use one of the form letters on R18. They're already worded for you. They're very clear. All we are looking for at this point is numbers. It's not about your passion. It's not about the things you want to say to him.
He doesn't care.
Josh has
made a really good point. If you are going to write, be very clear in terms of argument. Don't do name calling. Just sound like that you are a reasonable person that is of sound mind.
And let me tell you,
any threats is going to be grist to his mill.
Exactly.
And if you write to him and say, "Oh, you're a fucking idiot," then he's going to assume that you are also young. He's going to assume he's going to sit there and go, oh, see, it's just another kid who
no,
wants
No, if you threaten him, he's going to say, see, look, a gamer's a violent person.
That too.
You feed into his preconception. So that's a really
exactly,
good point,
because
Josh.
the way that we think as gamers is we use these sort of comments and we use them lightly. We use them as fleeting because to us it's a mind state. We don't take it seriously when we talk like this. I mean, that's the reason we play games like this. We don't take them seriously. We separate the fiction from the fact. The problem is this man doesn't. We know that. That's the reason that he's against
the guy. Yeah, he is straight as an arrow, a straight-laced guy. And if you start swearing at him and stuff, he's not going
to... We need to talk to him in his language.
As a person who has a job, pays taxes, is keeping him in his job, and wears a suit. Mm. I'm sorry, it's just how it is.
All right, so... We will leave that subject at that because we are running late.
Well, no, we won't. We'll just move it to the forums. And anyone that wants to comment, there is a whole section on it. Please feel free.
I've actually made that forum post a sticky, so it'll stay at the top of the game section. So get in there, voice your opinions.
Sarah is going crazy in the chat room here, about 100 messages a second.
Good on you, Sarah.
Hello, Sarah.
I am so impressed with her passion for this game.
She says, I wrote to Valve and very level-headedly apologized to them on behalf of our country.
I might do the same thing, actually.
Don't waste your time writing to the people that make the game.
No, we just want them to know. We just want them to know that we love them. Don't forget us just because we're sort of miles
away.
Right,
we're going to put that on the back burner for the moment. We will keep you all informed of any latest news that we hear about this. This is actually pretty big geek news, so we'll actually make sure that this goes up into the blog posts as well if anything comes up. Keep your eyes on the media. If you guys hear anything and you haven't seen us post it yet, send me some feedback at feedback@geekactually.com and tell us what you've seen and we will look into it. In the meantime, we're going to move right along here. I'm going to take the super off the screen just for those who haven't got it yet. It's r18games.com.au. Get involved. Really, things only change if people get involved. If you sit back and do nothing, then nothing will happen. It's as simple as that. All right, so take that off the screen. Now, we're going to move into other game news here, Josh. First of all, I'm going to bring a picture up on screen. We will post this picture at... we will post this picture at geekactually.com. Well, where's my pictures gone? My pictures have all vanished on me. Ah, here they are. And we're going to put this picture up on screen. This is for the Xboxers out there. This picture surfaced on the internet, on Engadget, actually. And I just wanted to get Josh's opinion on this. This is apparently a 802.11n Wi-Fi network adapter for the Xbox 360.
Or a testicle measurer.
Now, of course, the 802.11n is indicated by the two antennas. Anybody in the geek world knows, the N standard was ratified finally this week. It's been draft for 2 years. And apparently anybody who has a draft N router, that is now N. It is, the draft did pass as the final version. So, but it is now officially a format. It is now officially a wireless format. So this is suddenly surfaced saying that Xbox might be releasing an N. Now, if it's true, fantastic. I have an N-class router in this house, and I would love to have an N-class network adapter on my Xbox. But I have my doubts that this is actually real. Now, Josh, we talked before the show. Why do I have my doubts?
Well, I think, first off, we'll go for the relatively obvious one, which is the fact that the picture on the left-hand top side of the screen does not match the,
no, it's not the same
picture
label.
On the back of the label. I think that's probably a big one. And the other one that I'd like to point out is, I think before we even bother about getting to an N-class, we need to lower the price of the thing.
Well,
$150 for the G-class one.
That is true. And in fact,
it's ridiculous.
They're actually saying in America, I think this particular, the G-class network adapter sells for $100 US. And other G-class networking cards that you can get for your laptops and so forth sell for $30. So they're saying, why is this so overpriced? You know, because it's an Xbox and it clips on nicely on the back and everything else. But it really is an overpriced piece of hardware. And I have one. Because my router is upstairs and my machine is downstairs.
Can we just bring up the point that that this device is basically offering for like 150 Australian the same thing that a PS3 offers standardly? Like, I mean, that alone should make them want to try and bring the price down. It's not costing them $150 to
make.
That's
the other question, is why doesn't it have built-in Wi-Fi in it? Like, say, doesn't the Wii have built-in Wi-Fi?
Yep, Wii does. So does the PS3. So
come on, Microsoft, get your shit together.
Really? Well, like, I mean, the other question is that, like, the only thing that I can think of is with the price drop coming, with the 320 gig being announced. By the way, that's a bit of news for anyone that doesn't know. There is a 320 gig Modern Warfare console coming out at the same time as Modern Warfare. It'll be 500 Australian, I think, here or there. And it will come with two controllers, a copy of the game, and, of course, the console itself, which is a special limited edition version. But the hard drive will be 320 gigs.
Wow.
Now, with all of that, is it really that difficult, and will it really cost you that much to throw a network card in it?
No, I wouldn't think so, considering network cards are so goddamn cheap.
Anyway,
moving right along, speaking of consoles, here's a blast.
Did I hear new console?
Here's a blast from the past. Have a look at this for the chat room. You can have a look at this picture. Now, if you don't recognize this, I don't blame you, because this is called the Pippin, and the Pippin
worst console ever.
It's this big, bulky, horrible thing. It was released in the 90s, and it was only, I believe, released in Japan. And believe it or not, what you're looking at here right now is an Apple games console. Yes, Apple did actually release a games console in the 90s. Who knew? Now, the reason why this comes up is because news has surfaced this week, a lot of speculation that the Apple TV might metamorphosize, for lack of a better word, into some sort of console using App Store-type games, but on much higher resolution, of course, because the Apple TV is capable of pumping out high def and 5.1 sound. But, you know, being able to use iTunes to buy cheaper games and blah, blah, all you'd need is some sort of wireless controller for it. Oh, Josh has got something.
Question. It's not going to use that freaking remote, is it?
Oh, I hope not.
And if it's not, how's it going to connect? The thing is,
It's got Wi-Fi in it, so you could connect.
It's IR, right?
That's IR, but the machine itself has Wi-Fi, and there's nothing to say that you also couldn't put Bluetooth into it.
But you'd have to buy a new version.
Yeah, it's not going to be this old version. The old version's not going to do anything. But the reason there is evidence here, according to this article here, it says, from Mike Schramm, he says, I think the whole Apple buying Twitter rumor blog is on. He says, first Apple is picking up, he says that there is evidence to support this, and says that console makers have depended on the mercy of publishers to keep their hardware going. They sell the hardware at a loss, and then they rely on software sales and licensing. But they say here, with the Apple has their own app store, and they have their own developers platform that can actually be built on. The hardware is really just a modification of what's out there. They're saying it could be the Apple TV, or it could be the Mac Mini being turned into a console. Either way, it could move in that direction. But they also say that one of the things you could use for a controller, because they've already got the interface is set up, is people who have iPhones can actually use the iPhone
Dynamite
as the controller.
Just said that as well.
Which is a really intriguing concept.
What, like, is a Bluetooth thing?
No, it's through the Wi-Fi network. So it's all connected via the Wi-Fi.
It could work. And also, the whole screen just becomes buttons. And
yeah, your Apple TV or your iPod Touch becomes. And then basically what you've got is the game on both devices, so you can play it on your TV via the controller, but then you could also go out the door and play the mobile version of it, and they're saying they could actually sync the two games together to hold your position.
Crazy.
It's crazy talk, I tell you. It's crazy talk.
It's still casual gamers only. So.
Yeah, no, it is casual gamers. All right, we're going to move this show along because we are running a little bit late here. I've got way too many things on this board. But anyway, we're going to move into the Great Tech War, Great Internet Tech War of 2009. In the Great Internet Tech War, we're going to make this very quick because this was just something that amused me. Google announced this new search technique called Google Flip. And basically, the idea is at the moment there's only like 20 sites that actually support it, but if it works, it's still in beta. If it works, basically, when you do a Google search, it comes up visually on screen with the pages, and then you can flip through them like a PDF file. It's actually got little arrows, and you can flip through them, and it's all very swish. Not to be outdone, Microsoft turned around and said, by the way, we have this new thing that we're talking called Visual Search. And they're introducing Visual Search. So these two companies still trade blow for blow. Now, I've actually tried both, and Google's Visual Search is the better of the two, in my opinion.
But admittedly, you have to realize that they've probably only just come out with Visual Search on Bing, because of them. Yes. So the technology is probably a little bit more thrown together.
I'm pretty sure
you can probably almost see the duct tape marks.
Does that mean there's a bunch of boffins at Microsoft with really big bags under their eyes?
Yeah, pretty much going, works in the night, goddammit!
Yeah, I was
going
to say.
I've just got an image of like a Chinese sweatshop with like people at computers. And yeah.
Ben-Hur and the drums on the galley. Boom, 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 ramming speed. Boom, 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 boom.
Now, we could have this completely wrong, and you know, Microsoft Visual Search might have been first. I'm a kidder, aren't I? All right, anyway, more on that as it comes out of beta and we start to see a little bit more on it. But, you know, I've got like four articles here all talking about the two companies talking up their search. But, you know, it really is at this point just experimental. Only a few sites have got anything on there. Okay, also in war news, a continuing coverage of the Skype conflict. This one actually made me laugh a little bit because it really does sound like sore losers. It really does come across as that way. Apparently, for those who have been listening and following this news, you'll know that eBay has put Skype up for sale. We know that the founders of eBay had basically said that the underlying core technology of Skype was still licensed to them, and they were just licensing it, and they've now decided to pull their license because, we find out now, they're actually declaring that eBay got hold of illegal source code for their underlying technology and has made unauthorized changes to that underlying source code.
Do they actually have any proof of that?
I don't know. We don't know at this point. But they've decided to sue because Skype was sold last week to an investment firm. eBay still retains 35%, but Skype was sold to this investment firm. I think that the Skype founders are now basically crying sour grapes because they couldn't get the money together to buy it, the $3 billion. So they're now suing for $75 million a day that Skype is still in use because they're saying that there is a patent infringement on their underlying core technology.
I love that because, seriously, how many things do you know that actually make $75 million
a day.
A day.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, Skype is used a lot, though. It is the number one international telecommunication device.
Yes, but would it really make you $75 million a day?
Well, my question is, aside from paid Skype users, which are people who are using it to dial numbers and stuff like that, most Skype chat room can talk about this, maybe, but isn't most Skype conversation Skype to Skype? And if most conversation is Skype to Skype, they don't make money off of that. There's no advertising on Skype. How are they claiming $75 million? Although I've got to say one last thing on this before we move on. Do you find it amusing that these two guys, these founders of Skype, have managed to make an entire career out of one core technology? Because think about it. They created Kazaa, right? They were the founders of Kazaa using the same peer-to-peer technology that is used in Skype. Mm-hmm. They sold Kazaa, kept the underlying technology, formed Skype, using the same underlying core technology. They've then sold Skype, and now they have a new company, which I, for the life of me, the name has gone out of my head, but it uses the core underlying technology of Skype. So basically, they have just gone company to company to company using exactly the same thing over and over and over again.
Well, mate, the wheel's been very unpopular.
That's true. Whatever ain't broke, don't fix it, I guess.
Ooh. Furball's just put in some interesting stuff.
Yes.
The lawsuit also names the defendants Silver Lake Partners and its partners in the buyout.
Yes, this is Andreessen and company. These are the people who bought the 75%.
Basically, they're also suing. They're suing those people, but then all the people they work with as well.
Yeah, but and think about this. How must they feel? Last week, they just leveled out $3 billion to buy a company, only to be the following week sued for buying that company. It's like bad investment. Bad investment on their behalf. Okay, we're going to move into tech news. According to our venerable source, news.com.au, the federal government has decided to break up Telstra. Now, excuse me for snorting into the microphone. Now, for those who are overseas, and don't have the benefit of getting all this firsthand. Telstra is our number one telecommunications company in Australia. Not number one in quality, number one in size. It used to be our government telecommunications server. It used to be run by the government, and it was the only choice for many, many, many years, and it was actually originally called Telecom. Telecom
and
was...
And another name before that.
What was it before that?
I can't think of it.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
It's maybe somebody in the chat room remembers what it was called before Telecom.
Anybody here old in the chat?
Most of our Australian people here are... My
age. Anyway, so Telecom became Telstra. The Howard government sold off half of it. It became privatized, and then later the Howard government sold off the rest of it, and now it's a public company, and blah, blah, and it goes on and on and on. Anyway, the new government, Mr. Rudd and company, have decided that Telstra needs to be broken up because Telstra has retail and it has telecommunications. They want the retail to be its own company. They want it broken up and separated so there's telecommunication and there is the retail aspect of it. They want the telecommunication side to just focus on telecommunication. And they want fair pricing for all third-party users. So all the IINets and everybody else out there who have to use the lines, they want fair pricing across the board.
Wow.
I know.
That's quite a boast.
Now, what they basically issued the order was, Telstra, reorganize yourself and break up. Or we break you up. So that was the order that's been laid down. So now we wait to see what happens.
Can I just, you know, put my crystal ball happening? Ooh, it doesn't matter what they break up. Nobody out there in Australia will be paying 1 cent less than they're already paying now.
No. That's pretty bold, but yeah, I think it's probably true. It's probably true.
You tell me, yeah, now whatever.
What they do say in this follow-up story, though, is that they do say that the breakup or the separation of Telstra will increase competition in this country. Now, I'm not entirely sure if that does make that, but we already have the competition.
Some buggers still got to look after the infrastructure. It doesn't matter who you got with all of your phone lines and everything. Somebody still has to bloody dig up the cables and do the repairs and run the exchange. That's the bottom line, and that's where Telstra thinks. So it doesn't matter if you pay, you got your all your if and IINet people, and as you
and
say,
the, you know what the problem, and you know what the
someone biggest, still has to maintain that gear.
And the biggest, sorry, Josh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, interestingly enough, from a business point of view, it may not, we may not see huge drops in prices, but as you were saying, it will make the market more competitive. Because if everybody gets a drop in price, everybody has more money to move and more things. We may not get an actual price drop for the amount that we pay for internet, but you will see larger caps and things like that because people will have to give a reason to move to that company.
Well, there is also the National Broadband Network, which is what I'm coming to next.
I was going
to
ask about that.
Now, the National Broadband Network is a whole different issue. Now, there was an article that came out, once again, from news.com.au. This one is actually very fascinating, and the reason I bring it up is because apparently the federal government, there's the speculation now, this original article comes from The Australian, by the way, is that they're saying that the federal government actually inflated the cost of the National Broadband Network to force Telstra's hand, and it was all basically a push for this breakup of Telstra. They're actually saying, according to this article, that the network, which they claimed would cost $43 billion to make or lay out fiber to the house across Australia, is actually only probably going to cost $17 billion. Because they're saying it's a big drop, and they actually go on and say that they do a breakdown in this article about what it would actually cost, and they say on this first breakdown here they actually said that it would save $17 billion is what they're saying. They said it would cost $37 billion is what they're saying, or something along those lines. Anyway, it goes on, but they actually say that one of the costs that is factored into the National Broadband Network is to buy Telstra's network.
That would make sense.
Well, so what they're saying is they either buy Telstra's network or they don't buy Telstra's network, and there's two different prices involved in here. Now, if they don't buy Telstra's network, they want Telstra to break up so that Telstra isn't this monopoly holder of this whole thing. So what they want is they want to fairly price Telstra's already existing fiber lines that are already out there and build the National Broadband Network off of those. Or if they don't buy the Telstra network, then they're actually going to have to lay new fiber lines to compete with those. And it goes on and gets very messy.
Wow.
Anyway.
So either way, there will be blood.
There will be blood. And I think we're going to see a lot of movement on this over the next few weeks, because this is really hot in the news right now. Everybody is basically talking about, will Telstra break up? Will the government have to step in? Will the government step in? This is not the first time they've threatened Telstra to break up. If we remember 6 months ago that when Telstra was basically putting in a tender for the broadband network, the government at that point basically said, you know what, we think you're a monopoly, maybe you should break up. And then suddenly Telstra backed down, and nothing was done about it. But, you know, this is not the first time the government...
How many times have they broken up public transport? And they break it up, they put it back together, and they break it up. And people can't... They can't even sort out their stationery.
But that's all state, though. This is federal.
That's all state.
This is federal. And this is the thing. You know, quite frankly, I think that the first thing the government should spend money on, if they're going to spend $43 billion on anything, why don't they buy back Telstra? Make it a public company again? Make it a, you know, make it a government-run... Look, as a government-run building, as a government-run organization, at least there are standards that have to be kept to.
No, I have to agree with you there.
You know?
I think...
Katie made the point. I love that. Before we go on, my lovely wife, Katie, made the perfect point on this. I mentioned it on the show before. We saw an ad on TV once that said, own a piece of Telstra. And she looked at the TV and goes, I already do.
You did, exactly. You know?
It's like...
Look, you're exactly right. There's things that the government should own that should be public concerns. One is education, one is health, and one is transport, and the other one is telecommunications.
Essential services.
Essential services. They are money pits that you throw money in this hole, and
you don't
know where it goes.
You don't expect to make profit from
exactly
this.
Exactly right. Exactly
they
right.
They are not businesses. They are essential services. The government should be supplying the basic infrastructure of water, gas, electricity, telecommunications,
health,
public transport, health, and education.
And education.
You know, then you can have private organizations on top of that.
You're
gonna
have
them coming
at your
wazoo. But
there
should be a base infrastructure built. Mm-hmm. And that is not... supposed to make money. It's not a business.
It is not a business.
That's why we pay taxes.
That's
you know?
Right.
And we pay, you know, for our American listeners out there, they're going, oh, but, you know, pay less taxes. Yeah, well, we pay a lot of taxes.
We pay a lot of taxes
to look
and
after
we expect
our roads
to not
and
die
our public transport and everything else.
In a gutter instead of going to hospital.
And we're not a communist country, funnily enough. Having a socialized medical system does not mean you're a socialist country. You know?
Exactly.
It's like, you know, we have, and at the moment...
Well, we're all vehemently agreeing with each other, so we
absolutely,
should move
let's
on.
Move on. There is a threat to the national broadband network. Apparently, according to this article, it says that there is a huge uptake of wireless, and a lot of people, we're not talking about hardcore gamers or people who are downloading or the people who need that high broadband, the average mom and dad is basically saying, why do I need fiber to the house? I'm quite happy with wireless. I can do everything I can do with a wireless network, and they're saying, why don't they just put up more wireless towers and give us wireless? Why do we need national broadband network?
Well, there you go. Maybe. We'll see.
Well, I can say that people in the country are very disadvantaged.
That's true. But, you know, could you set up wireless towers out
of
the country?
I don't know. I don't know the technology behind it. I'm asking you.
I don't know. This is something that we have to wait and see how we go. All right, we're going to move this on because it's already 1 hour into the show and we have to get to film news or we are going to be so late. So here is our film news. Green Hornet, funnily enough, is back in the news one more time.
Yay.
I think 3 weeks in a row we've headed off film news with Green Hornet. All right, the reason we head off with Green Hornet is because last week Nicolas Cage walked from the production.
No one cared.
And his hairpiece.
And no one cared. And this week, Green Hornet has picked up a new bad guy. Michelle Gondry's Green Hornet is filming, and their new bad guy who has been cast is Christoph Waltz from Inglourious Basterds.
Hell yes.
I am so down with that. So he's the... Did you see Inglourious Basterds?
No, I have to.
He played the Nazi...
Oh, the one that was...
Hunter.
Oh, right.
Who is being now talked about that they should give him an Oscar for his performance. It is brilliant. He is great. And he's going to add much-needed class to a production that, by the way, did I tell you, I don't think is ever going to be finished. speaking of... Oh, no, we'll come back to that one. Speaking of casting, the A-Team movie, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, has picked up some more cast. Apparently, Copley from District 9, which we talked about, the fact that he was in talks, looks very close to actually signing the deal, so he might be playing. And Jessica Biel, yes, the woman who is the most dangerous woman on the internet, according to that article a few weeks ago. Apparently, more sites have viruses that have Jessica Biel, so when you do Jessica Biel searches, you pick up more viruses from looking at Jessica Biel sites than anything else. Apparently, she's also been she is in close discussions to be cast in the A-Team movie. So the cast as it stands now with those two would be Liam Neeson, Bradley Cooper, and Quentin Rampage Jackson, who I assume is going to be Mr. T.
See, I take it he's a wrestler?
By that name, could you be anything else?
I'm a brain surgeon.
Now, we've also got not just casting news, we have directorial news, and I got to tell you, these two, we talked about games being turned into films. Well, here they come.
This is gold.
Here they come.
These are gold.
Peter Berg has signed to direct Battleship. Yes, the Hasbro game, You Sunk My Battleship.
What were you I swear that line has to be in the movie. I will not rest unless that's in it.
Yeah, it goes like snakes on a plane, you know, and they kept, like, you know, saying what they wanted. You have to do that.
Oh, God. That's going to happen.
Peter Berg boards Battleship. It says here that he's very excited. It's supposed to be set for release in 2011. It is part of a two-picture deal for Berg. Who's
Battleship
also directing
down,
an
Battleship
Up. He's actually directing another film, an Afghan war drama called Lone Survivor.
I'm
says
sure
here,
the two will be very close together.
It says here that this is a multi-year deal with Hasbro. They're also producing Stretch Armstrong with Steve Odekirk.
I love the doll. I can't see the
They're also directing a film of Clue. They've obviously forgotten that they've already done that, which, according to this article on Variety, it says Gore Verbinski is still connected to. I thought Gore Verbinski had walked from that project. But anyway, it says Monopoly, directed by Ridley Scott. This is not a joke. I couldn't make this.
Are you on drugs?
I couldn't make
this
up. This is Variety, all right? It says,
did they open their cupboard in the hallway and just fucking look
He's
at
out of
game?
Ideas. Hang He's on, out of wait. Ideas.
So the new porn movie's going to be Twister.
Funny you should say that.
Oh,
no, I'm joking. Funny you should say that, though, because we do have Monopoly, directed by Ridley Scott, Candyland, directed by Kevin Lima, and Ouija. Remember the Ouija boards? They're directing a film of Ouija. Directed by Michael Bay's Platinum Dunes.
Can I just say, Battleship's already been represented in cinema in Bill and Ted's Bogus Adventure.
Well, even more to the point, there was a movie, an English film, that was all about Ouija boards.
Yeah, but it wasn't the licensed product, Ouija.
You know, Battleship.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They played with death. They were playing all those games with him to get out of hell, remember?
According to this, it says Battleship was launched by Milton Bradley in 1967 and has sold more than 100 million units. I guess that's why they're making a movie of it. But we're not finished yet.
No, this is my favorite.
We're not finished yet. Do you guys remember, and I didn't have time to bring up a graphic of it, unfortunately. I was going to bring up a graphic. Do you remember the Rock and Sock'em boxing robot game? The two robots that punch each other?
Oh, hell yeah.
Do you remember that?
That was depicted in the Reese Witherspoon movie where she gets married, where she's Sweet Home Alabama.
Okay, but we're doing
that. That was on top of the wedding cake.
But we're doing better than that because they're making a movie of it.
I love her face right now. We just raped everything in her childhood.
Oh my God.
They're making a movie of it. The movie is not called Rock and Sock and Robots. It is actually called Real Steel. And it's being directed by Sean Levy. And he is... I'm sorry. I don't even think I can do this.
Keep going. Give me some film.
There you're
and
on
then film. Now, see, we've already done it. So if they bring out Rock'em Sock'em, we sue their
but
pants off.
But you didn't
off.
Pay a licensing deal. You're going to get sued.
Hands down.
Hands down. All right. So the funny thing is, and this is where it gets really funny is Peter Berg left Rock'em Sock'em Robots to go direct Battleship. One step.
Hang on. And soon to be followed by Barbie's camper van.
Oh, wait. Barbie can't be far away.
Oh, don't start. Well, no, why did you have to
but
say
Barbie's
it?
Barbie's already done all the ballet ones anyway.
Sarah goes, Monopoly? Candyland? I don't buy it.
That does my head in.
Sarah, you call bullshit, but these are actually projects. This is the Hollywood. This is
Sarah, David's got his serious face.
This is the current Hollywood that just had a four studio bidding war to win the rights to the old 1979 video game Asteroids.
Look, you know, let's
move on. My head is about to explode.
Yeah, I need real news, please.
All right, so how about some real news?
I need bourbon.
How about we swap some news around here and we'll jump into this one. We'll say that it's 1960s all over again. Apparently the Beatles release on the 9th of the 9th, 09 has skyrocketed them into the charts. In fact, in the... this is the part that I loved on this. They can't be on the Billboard chart for the top 100 because it's reissued music. But there is actually a reissued chart that they're on. It's called the Catalog Album Chart. And they have 15 out of the 18 top spots.
Wow.
So the other three spots being held by, and I thought this was actually quite funny when you actually look at who the other ones are held by, whereas I've lost my, see, I didn't have time to actually highlight my pages today, so I've lost my position now. But they basically said that the other three positions being held by Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So you've got 15 Beatles songs, apparently Abbey Road, Abbey Road is the number one. Sergeant Pepper's, Rubber Soul, Yellow Submarine, Revolver. These are all right up there in the charts. So,
it's has been re-released because Michael Jackson died and he owned the rights.
Probably had something to do with it, but it was also the anniversary because it was Beatles song number nine. Well, it was the September 9th, 2009.
Oh, okay.
So they reissued digital remasters of all the Beatles music. They released Beatles Rock Band, and there was rumor that it was going to go digital on iTunes as well, but that didn't happen. But yeah, it's the big anniversary for the Beatles.
Oh, okay.
So they reissued all the stereo remasters, and apparently they also reissued the mono remasters for the real hardcore collectors out there. But it actually was missing three albums because they were stereo albums, so they didn't fit into the mono thing. Mm. And the mono remasters, even missing those extra albums, were more expensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're really for the hardcore. Yeah. The last piece of film. Oh, no, sorry, I take that back. There isn't the last piece. Silent Hill. Do you remember the movie of the video game adaptation? Well, apparently, for a film that everybody claims was such a big flop, it's getting a sequel. Apparently, Roger Avery and producer Samuel Hadida are climbing back up to Silent Hill, and they are doing a sequel. They are preparing it right now.
Horror game.
It says Hadida's French-based Davis Films aims to shoot the movie next year after they shot Resident Evil 4.
Wasn't Radha Mitchell in that?
Yep.
Yes.
Sure, I never saw it. Was it any good?
I didn't see it.
I saw it. I honestly don't see what everybody.
Over the man with the fog machine, wasn't it? Lots of fog.
Half of the movie. It's a complicated thing. It's actually one of probably the better horror games we've ever had.
What was it about the film? What was the movie like?
Exactly. It was a very, very straight to game. Like it was probably the most. If nothing else, it was probably the most true to form. Oh. It followed almost the entire games. The basic plot theories, the creatures were all perfect. The scenes were amazing. But yeah, the storyline is probably where it fell short, and there's a couple of those really annoying scenes where it explains everything you already knew about the movie.
Like Basil Exposition. I'm now telling you everything there's for the next 30 years I don't know about the gamers, so that you will understand what is happening in this movie. Now you may be afraid.
Except for it happens at the end, and it's kind of like you're going, come on, we didn't really need to know this. But overall, very, very interesting, very, very beautiful, horrible kind of a thing.
The trailer
was
beautiful. I mean, the trailer looked fantastic. I never saw the film, though. I've actually got a copy downstairs.
There are some wonderful... things, but...
I want 20 cents for every time I've said that on this show.
We should have a jar. Can we have a jar?
Because I have so many films downstairs, I haven't watched it.
Then we can have a Foley. I've got that downstairs.
All right, let's move on. I'm down with that. I haven't seen the original, but I'm down with that. Any video game adaptation brings us closer to a better video game adaptation.
Mm, and then we'll have to have a different rating and it won't be the same as the game, and then we'll explode.
Oh, shut up. This is the controversial story, and I've held it to last. Let's not get into a big debate about this, because we've already debated this out.
I just want to talk about the movies.
Yeah, all right, we're going to get to the movies in just a second, but This is Steven Spielberg has basically now declared who he wants to play Elwood P. Dowd in his Harvey remake. And before we get into the whole thing about, they shouldn't make a Harvey remake, it's happening. We've already argued this out. All of us. We've all argued this out so often. It's happening. But I got to tell you, who Spielberg wants to play Elwood P. Dowd, none of us thought of.
You're wrong.
I'm sorry, but none of me is interested. I'm just saying that right now.
Look, none of us thought of this, and we had a poll up about this and everything in the forum.
Pinkies, toes, fingers.
Settle down in the stalls. but he wants Robert Downey Jr. to play Elwood P. Dowd, and I'm actually down with that. If you're going to make the remake, you know, I actually wanted Jim Carrey, but I think Robert Downey Jr. is fine. I would buy that.
He's got the fineness, but hasn't he got a bit too much of an edge?
No, but he can also play that Dan. Let's go back to some of his earlier stuff where he was playing
Heart
things
and
like Heart and Souls. Exactly. Yes, Heart and Soul. All right, so anyway, it's not confirmed yet. It's just who Spielberg wants, and his history, which shows Spielberg wants, Spielberg gets, basically. What is it our forum guy said about Spielberg? The reason he looks so smug is because he's raped all of our favorite things before going to bed or whatever it was.
Oh, that was my friend. My friend. No.
Oh my God.
That was from Callum in the forum. It was pretty harsh, but it was kind of true in one way. Anyway, this came right on the heels of the Harvey news. Anyway, we're going to move on. Now, before we move out of film news.
Did we actually say who it was? I missed that.
Robert Downey Jr.
Okay, good. Because can I just finish up by saying no? Okay, no.
Why?
The guy, there's nothing about that man that fits.
Oh, there's a lot about that man that
fits. You didn't respond to anything I just said. I said, yes, he can be a bit fey, but isn't he got too much edge? Did that just wave over your head?
Somebody in the chat room, by the way, says Josh looks tired. He needs coffee.
That's what I was responding to at the time. I'm sorry. I was trying to listen, but I'm not saying the guy's not awesome. I'm not saying that he's not capable of amazing feats and so on and so forth. I'm just saying that I agree with you. He's way too edgy.
I think he could play it.
James Stewart was not edgy. There wasn't a piece of edge.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you completely. James Stewart was not edgy, but I think Robert Downey Jr. could pull it off. I think he could actually tone down that edge. I think he can play Faye. Watch Heart and Soul.
Yeah,
watch
but there's a lot of drugs films. Have gone down the line since Heart and Soul.
And he's come out a softer person at the other side, though.
Oh, he has not.
Oh, he has so.
Iron Man, come on.
He shows softness in Iron Man.
He was edgy with edge on toast. Let's get on.
All right, let's move on. We're not going to open this debate. If you want to debate this, we actually have a thread in the forum all about the Harvey remake.
Don't pull a thread or it'll run.
come down to geekactually.com/forum, and we actually have a thread on who should play Elwood P. Dowd. Come and join the fun, and you can have your own say in that. We're going to talk three very quick memorandums. Sorry?
And three sentences.
Yeah, that's when we get to the films. We're getting films. This is just finishing off film news. I just want to bring up a couple of photos here and just we'll run through these very quickly. First of all, this man is Larry Gelbart. Larry Gelbart passed away this week. For those who don't know who Larry Gelbart is, he is a very famous writer. He helped write the MASH TV series. He wrote much television, and he has passed on Three's Company. I've got his cast list goes on forever and ever and ever. He will be missed. He was also a producer, by the way. He will be missed. He was a very, very, really good writer, and he has passed on. But we've also lost this week Henry Gibson. Now, for those who, Henry Gibson has one of those faces where everybody goes, oh, I know him, but they very rarely know his name. He was in the Blues Brothers and Laugh-In and so forth. And he, for those who don't know, in the Blues Brothers, he was the leader of the Nazis. He's passed on as well with a very short bout of cancer. But the biggest one this week, I think, was Patrick Swayze, who has also passed on this week after a prolonged battle with prostate cancer. Now, he fought long and hard over this prostate cancer, including just completing an entire season of a television show that he went and did, even while under treatment. So he really was a fighter. He finally succumbed to it, and he passed away this week. So he will be missed as well. He, out of all three of those, Swayze is probably the genre favorite for the geeks out there because of films like Point Break and Ghost and, well, Dirty Dancing, but we won't hold that against him.
Yeah.
But, of course, one of my favorites, Roadhouse, which I just absolutely
adore. You know what was good about him? Even though he was a bit of did the action stuff, he never was boxed in terms of his choices. I mean, even though he did that what was the American version of Priscilla? Where he was
Too Wong Fu.
Yeah, that one. He did that, so he wasn't afraid to.
No, he wasn't afraid to take a chance.
And particularly.
Red Dawn!
Oh, yes, Dynamite's with me as well.
But the one with Jake Gyllenhaal. Donnie Darko, to take a very unsympathetic role. He wasn't afraid of doing that.
And he took some rough edges, too. Now, I got to say, speaking of remakes, they're also remaking Red Dawn at the moment, which I think is a disastrous idea. So, because Red Dawn really was a thing of its time. It was about the Cold War. It was about the Russians. And it just won't work moving it into the terrorist era. I think it's a really bad idea. It was also that cast, that time, Walter Hill, John Milius. Sorry, not Walter Hill, John Milius. It just had certain ingredients, and it was really a very right-wing film, and I don't think they should remake it. But that's my personal two cents.
The thing that I'm worried about is, what's the Australian writer that wrote Tomorrow When the World Began? That's what you're basically going to get.
Pretty much.
And I hated that book series, so I'm incredibly worried that we're just going to end up with this, updated version of this that doesn't work, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's going to be all sorts of troubles that I can see, and also I have no sympathy towards the whole thing about the Cold War and stuff like that. Is the way that the media was run at the time and so on and so forth, we didn't have any sympathetic eyes towards anyone on that side. Whereas now, I find movies like that too intense, and I think that that's what you're going to get. You're going to get a whole bunch of unnecessary kind of like.
Also, at the time of Red Dawn, when we did this very right wing, very let's fight off the evil Ruskies and all this sort of stuff. That's fine. And we accepted all that flag waving. It was the era of Rambo and everything else. But I think to have that now is going to be almost a little embarrassing.
Mm. You can't play it that anymore. No. You can't play it that way because it's not the same kind of war
as
well.
The world's not the
same. There's no clear cut bad guy.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Not a clear cut bad guy. I don't see realism in the idea that a terrorist mounting an all out war and conquering the United States.
That's not the way that they
run.
No,
it's not how they run. Whereas the Russians invade. They parachute in, it's an invasion, and it actually makes sense.
Is that the one in the boys' school?
Yeah. No. That's Toy Soldiers.
Toy Soldiers.
This is one where they're in school, but it's basically the Russians invade, they take over America, and there's one little batch of freedom fighters, all these kids, basically start fighting back. They call themselves the Wolverines, and they start fighting back. It's a lot of fun. It's nonsense, but it's a lot of fun,
take it serious.
Let's move on. We got a couple of films to talk about here really quickly. Katrina wants to throw in three sentences. She's promised us three sentences on a film that she saw this week, which is
Aliens in the Attic.
All right. To Tangerine, Nikki wants to see this.
That's all right. I'm not spoiling anything.
Okay, but that's good if you don't spoil. But Nikki is no longer in our chat room because he's actually gone to go see Up. So
no, we've actually talked about it this morning already.
Okay. Hit us. Three sentences.
Went with my nephew. Best scene in the whole movie is where the grandmother, who is being mind controlled, and they have a remote on her like a Game Boy, and the bully in the crowd has a mind control and the aliens have control of him, have a full-on martial arts slow-mo in the air kicking fight. Hilarious. Almost worth the price of the ticket, but I would see it on DVD. Girl Sharpay from High School Musical, Wasted, and the end scene is worth it. But still, that was the whole reason why I went with my nephew, who's 10 and a half. We enjoyed that. That was the reason for going, was the fight scene with the grandmother and the bully.
Cool.
Thank you.
You see part of that in the trailer, actually. It's very funny. Okay, so that's that little encapsulated review. Thank you very much. So you're saying wait for DVD, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. All right, we're going to do a second...
Or Tight Ass Tuesday.
Second little... Tight Ass Tuesday. For those in America who don't know, we actually have Half Price Tuesday. Well, it used to be Half Price. Now it's just
really
cheaper.
Sort of 75%.
Now it's just cheaper Tuesdays. Secondly, I just want to bring up as a small encapsulated review the film Paper Heart. Paper Heart, which I actually saw several weeks ago, so bear with me for being a little bit fey on some of the details, because I saw it several weeks ago. It opens next week. It is a pseudo-documentary. When I say pseudo, because it is half documentary, half fictional, and part puppet show. And it's basically about a young comedian, her name is Charlene Yee, who basically doesn't understand what love is, and she doesn't believe in the concept of love at first sight. So her and her director, who, funnily enough, this is where the fiction comes in, the director is actually played by an actor, because the director didn't want to play himself. So she's playing herself, but the director's played by an actor. They blur the line a lot. But basically, they travel across America and talk to people and ask them about what is love, and because she just doesn't understand. She thinks part of her is broken. And along the way, though, funnily enough, she meets Michael Cera, one of Josh's favorite actors, and falls in love. And so the film kind of takes this turn because suddenly she's discovering what love is during the making of a documentary where she's saying she doesn't believe in love. The film is funny, it is charming, it is sweet. Charlene Yee is adorable. I mean, she is just absolutely adorable, and it is highly recommended to see, but you will not lose anything by seeing this on DVD. If you do want to go have a night at the cinema, it is well worth seeing. It's very funny in places. Michael Cera is actually quite bearable, Josh, because he isn't He is the star of Year One and Superbad.
Oh, yeah.
And Charlene Yee, for those who want to know who she is usually behind the scenes because she's a stand-up comedian, and you see some of her stand-up in the show, but she was also the girlfriend of the guy growing the beard and the hair in Knocked Up.
Oh, yes, I know.
The little Asian girl who is always hanging around with him. So that's Charlene Yee. And, of course, this has cameos by people like Seth Rogen and so forth, who she's also interviewing. And I got to tell you, Seth Rogen was hysterical because it looked like he was so stoned he could barely stand up straight. He did the entire thing with the whole Chinese eye, really just laughing at her the whole time. It is well worth seeing. It is fun. It is starting at cinemas here. In America, it is actually playing in limited release, and we're already on DVD pretty soon. Here, it's opening at the art houses next week. So you can go and have a look at that if you want to. That's number two. Number three in our little encapsulated reviews, and then we're going to get to our major review, which is why I'm putting it to the last, because we're going to go into spoilers. But our last little encapsulated review, I am going to play a trailer for. Now, I do actually apologize to our podcast listeners, because unfortunately the trailer is in Swedish. So so you'll get lots of grunts and groans in Swedish. For those who are in the chat room, you'll be able to follow the subtitles.
For those of you familiar with the Muppets, we'll be able to understand it from the Swedish chef.
Jeg regner med at dere små bortskjemte snørrvalper ikke har giddet å lese litt lokalhistorie om området her før dere kommer valsende inn på den helvete snedtraktoren deres. Under 2. verdenskrig så var Øksfjord en utrolig viktig plass for tyskerne. Det var en holdeplass for tyske krigsskip. Folk ble torturert og banket og mishandlet hver eneste dag. Tror man jeg sier det. Det här var onde satans jävla.
Sjekk her da.
Oh. Fortune and glory, kid.
Du vet ikke hvem vi er, ikke sant?
Okay, for those who haven't figured it out yet, that was Zombie Nazis. That is a film called Dead Snow out of Sweden, which Josh and Sarah and I had the opportunity of seeing this week. We talked a little bit about it last week when we did the Swedish film Let the Right One In, and somebody asked us if we were going to see that. Well, yes, we did.
And, where did you see it?
Sorry?
Where did you see it?
Import. So cool. We got a hold of it. But it was a lot of fun. Let me tell you, it was a lot of fun. Josh, I'm going to let you lead this one off.
Well, like I was telling a friend of mine when he was asking me after I saw it, like, what the movie was like, the first thing that came to mind is you can't really put a movie about zombie Nazis in any particular class. It has become its own genre in one foul swoop. Like, it is a movie about Nazi zombies. Really, how much cooler can you get than that? I mean, like, we have finally crossed the line and we have gone, you know what, it's not bad enough that we have zombies. We need to make them even more evil.
Now, down and Mike in the chat room has just said, I was hoping for more like Let the Right One In.
No.
It is completely opposite in every way.
Are they still true to their Nazi beliefs?
Well, being greedy and wanting money, yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, in a way. No, absolutely.
But are they trying to kill any racial groups?
No.
You know, I won't eat your brain, but I'll eat yours, or none of that.
Oh no, there's no brain eating in this.
There's no brain eating in this. This is your infection style zombies. This is the bite, and then you become kind of a thing.
Oh, but even that is not even heavily dealt.
You end up wearing
this
a
helmet. Well, it's just a dismember type zombie.
Yeah.
So they don't turn into Schwarzenegger. I know Nazi.
No. These Nazis, we won't give too many spoilers away for anything, because I do actually recommend anybody who likes horror films or Swedish films or something just for a bit of fun should go out and have a look at this when it comes out into your city. It is nonsense. It is a complete homage to Sam Raimi.
Oh, absolutely.
And a few others. But there are actually scenes in it which are cut exactly like Raimi would cut a scene, including being in a shed with tools. just yeah. like Evil Dead. So, I mean, this guy who's made it is obviously a big fan of Sam Raimi and other another horror film people. The plot is really thin. It is just for the sheer joy of seeing a bunch of Nazi zombies come out to play, basically. These are the fast-moving zombies.
They're not these stumbling slow ones. No.
These are the fast-moving zombies for those who are wanting purism. What do we got here?
Apparently, shout out to Sarah's grandma. Who
Hello, Zina.
The show.
Hi.
Hello, Zina. Welcome to the show. look, this was a truly fun film. I don't think we were looking for a masterpiece. We were not looking for Oscar caliber. It is not the same caliber as Let the Right One In.
But the thing that I love about it is it's very aware that it's not taking itself seriously, and so it is just a comedy romp.
Let the Right One We reviewed last week. It's basically a vampire film mainstream, but it's actually more of a drama. As Josh put it, it was the vampire film of My Girl.
Yeah, it's a vampire version of My Girl. Now, bye, Sarah. Sarah has to go.
Bye, Sarah.
Bye, bye to you in the chat room. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, but I wanted to say that one scene that if anybody sees this film has to keep an eye out is the one where the guy at the end out of the last two that are there gets bitten.
That scene!
And it is just absolutely brilliant in every way, and absolutely will have you in stitches the
absolutely.
Entire time.
No, that scene's a killer. The first 15-20 minutes of the film is the setup as usual horror films, you know, the stupid teenagers arrive at the cabin, but from about 20 minutes onwards, when the first head gets split in half and the brains all fall out, from that point onwards, you're on a roll, you know, and you're going.
Yeah, it is a complete adventure the entire time, and one thing I would like to say is this is a film that you could probably even take your girlfriend that doesn't like horror movies to, really. I mean, as long as she can stand gore... It is really not that horrifying.
It's not scary.
It's not scary at all. It's in that kind of Dragon Into Hell. It is really like... It is your Evil Dead style of movies. It's more like the Evil Dead movies, and the fact that there are moments that are scary,
Planet Terror does have a lot of comedy. Fun with it. Planet Terror, not scary, but really gory, you know, and lots of, you know, head-kicking zombies and, you know, what have you. So, yeah, no, you're onto something.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, you're onto something. It is a lot of fun, and I do recommend it. Now, I was also going to review 500 Days of Summer, but we are running really late. Now, 500 Days of Summer came out this week in the States. It came out a few weeks ago in the States. It came out this week in Australia. We'll hold that until next week. I will review 500 Days of Summer next week. All I'll say about 500 Days of Summer is it is worth seeing. So go see it, and we'll talk more about that next week because we're really running out of time. Yes, Josh, what are you laughing about?
I just have to add in what Brad's put in the chat room there.
Brad, of course, Brad. How are you, Brad? Yeah. We covered your news earlier.
Yeah, Brad has said if your girlfriend doesn't like horror, get rid of her.
Hey, my wife doesn't like horror. No, my wife doesn't like horror. Look at me.
Is that a deal breaker for you, Brad? Never mind.
I'm not getting rid of my
obviously,
wife.
He has his sights set on what he wants in a girlfriend. So, yeah.
Yes, Brad, sorry you came in late, because Brad in our chat room is actually the Brad who sent us the email about the whole Left 4 Dead being banned thing. Okay. So that actually started off the show, Brad, so you might want to listen to the podcast, because we did a whole thing on Left 4 Dead earlier on. We're going to move on, though, because we are running late. We have about 20 minutes left. We are going to review Up. Let's start this off with the trailer, because that will get us all into the mood, and then we will talk more about it.
Good afternoon. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
No.
I could help you cross the street.
No.
I could help you cross your yard.
No.
I could help you cross your...
No.
Ow.
All his life, Carl Fredrickson dreamed of adventure. Today, his adventure is finally taking off.
So long, boys!
Please let me in.
No. All right.
Russell! Come on!
Hi there. My name is Doug. My master made me this collar so that I may talk. Squirrel. Hi there.
Ah, what is that thing?
Oh, it likes me.
Shoot. Tom, beat it.
Whoa, what is that?
Get him.
They're coming.
Does anyone know?
With my Wilderness Explorer GPS, we'll never be lost. Oops.
Disney Pixar's Up.
What do these do, boy?
Would you throw that cuerno contigo? I use that collar. What hushiwa hanashima to talk with? I would be happy if you stopped.
Okay, so that is Pixar's latest film. Oh, hello, we've started another trailer. What's going on here? Stop that. Go away. Go away. Okay, that is Pixar's Up, which is their latest film. Now, we saw this in glorious digital 3D. Katrina saw it in 3D as well. She saw it separately to us. Josh and I went to see this together with Josh's lady friend, and I can pretty much honestly say we can start this review by saying I absolutely loved this film. I thought this was a lot of fun. For our American listeners, this feels a little bit late because Up actually came out in June in the States. But for some reason, for the last three or four Pixar films, Australia has decided that September is Pixar release time. This holds up everything because even the DVD release in America doesn't happen until November because they have to wait for it to open in all regions before they release the DVD. So it really, I don't know why Australia does this. For some reason, they've decided Pixar comes out in September. It's the most stupid thing in the world, but it does. Now, the other thing that is controversial is for some reason it was supposed to come out on September 2nd, and it did seem to open everywhere else in Australia but Sydney. And I don't know why Sydney was held later, and there's still no explanation as to that, why that happened. So Donna Mike in our chat room has basically said for the last 3 weeks, aren't you reviewing Up this week? It's like, this is why. For some reason, the weirdo releasing of this film. Anyway, we're finally going to review it, and I will say to anybody, the first thing I would say is that if you have the opportunity to see this in 3D, see it in 3D. It is worth the extra money.
Oh, yeah.
It will still play in 2D, it will still be funny and everything else, but the 3D is dazzling. Josh, what did you think?
I have to agree with you, man. I mean, like, I am constantly waiting, as the skeptic that I am, for Pixar to falter just so that we can actually see it. I mean, it was kind of the way with Cars a little bit, but when I saw the trailer of this film, it doesn't give it the depth that it really should. Like, it is so much more than, like, a fun adventure romp. There is so much emotion and life in this movie that isn't shown in the trailer, and I will admit that the only reason that I really still went into this with a positive attitude was the reviews it was getting overseas. It was saying that it was such a great movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I went into it not skeptical, but just weary, because I was like, what are we going to see? But the first 10 minutes summed up the entire movie perfectly, just saying this is still a really intelligent film.
Yes.
And it is probably the thing that made the film for me was just that first opening bit.
And what is really interesting about that is that a lot of the other podcasts around, a lot of reviews I've read, actually have talked about that first 10 minutes, basically saying it took them completely off guard. They weren't expecting something as serious as that to start the film off. I actually didn't come away with that feeling. I thought the opening was charming. I thought it was beautifully handled.
You had to have it.
It was so well handled.
It was so well handled, and it was also funny. It also had really funny moments. Them as children, in particular, the character of Ellie as a child was a scream, you know? And I thought it was beautifully handled. I thought that it actually absolutely established his character for the entire film. And you needed it. And I don't think it was over. I don't think it was heavy-handed. I don't think it was overly sentimental. I thought it really fit beautifully.
You can't get his commitment to what he's doing if you didn't have that 10
absolutely.
Minutes.
Absolutely.
I thought the other thing about it was that the trailer really portrays him to be much more grumpy than he actually was in the film. He's actually not as bar humbug as I expected him to be. He was actually quite lighthearted. He was a bit sort of, I'm doing this and I don't want, you know, anyone getting in the way. But he was never that kind of grouchy Grinch sort of a character I was expecting from that trailer. Like, he just seemed to be that way.
Absolutely.
And I think that's probably why, because the trailer has been set up so well to sort of almost counterbalance what you get when you hit the film.
I'm just going to interject here really quickly. Data Mike in the chat room has asked, did you cry in the first 5 minutes? I didn't, because I'm a cold-hearted bastard. Did you cry in the first 5 minutes?
I welled up when they lost the baby.
You welled up. No spoilers at this point, no. Please.
I'm always on that emotional line. I'm very easy to hit emotionally when I actually see something worthwhile. And no, I didn't, but I was very, very upset.
My prediction is my lovely wife Katie is actually seeing it right now. In fact, the session started half an hour ago.
So she's probably just finished.
She's probably just finished crying. I would guess that my wife would be in tears at that opening section. She's a softie, though. She's really easy. speaking of crying, by the way, just as a side note, 500 Days of Summer made Sarah cry. She'd hate me for telling you this, but it made her cry because it's not actually...
She's gone, so it's okay.
Not overwhelmingly sad, but for some people, it is going to push buttons just because of it being about relationships and stuff like that. We'll talk more about that next week, though.
I like what Brad's just put in. It earned the emotion it got.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It was a slow build for that first 5-10 minutes, and the payoff was the rest of the film. The rest of the film more than says, even after all that tragedy, you can still have all this fun. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know? You're never too old for an adventure.
Absolutely.
And I love that underlying tone.
I got something different out of it.
There's more than one layer, but that's just the...
Yeah. Onion's got layers. You're on camera.
Sorry. I didn't want to interrupt Josh.
No, go for it. All right, your turn.
All right. I thought the look was fantastic. Any of you actually have much to do with old people, you know that old men that have really thick hair, it was such a perfect depiction
hair. I have to bring up the Miss Katrina superhero. Hold on. Okay, go for it. Yep.
So the bottom line is I thought the look of it was amazing. The feathers, the movement of the clouds, the balloons themselves, I thought that was fantastic. I thought the story fell down in terms of the age discrepancy between one character that they meet later on.
I'll talk about it too, because I actually don't think there is a discrepancy, but we'll have a talk about that.
It's an interesting point. Anyway, I was kind of with her.
All right, and then I do have another spoiler thing. I thought in terms of the character, I thought, you're right, Ed Asner's voice was just the perfect fit for that.
Absolutely.
There was an element of violence that disturbed me, but I'll talk about that in the spoilers. I thought the dogs were good. I thought there was still a little bit, I'm getting very over animation doing the whole wink, wink, nod, nod, I'm making a modern reference thing. And I felt there was a bit of that in there.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
You know, I mean, to me, the last really pure Pixar film would have been The Incredibles. I was getting a bit over it with Cars, and I got, what was the one after the Cars?
Wall-E.
I never saw Wall-E. I haven't seen
that. Oh, wow.
I just didn't get around to it. Anyway, so I thought the house was underutilized as a character. I thought they sort of seemed to be on it, and then the whole aspect of the balloons popping, I thought that could have been a bit more done.
Scenes where, like, as the house gets destroyed and it slowly gets more and more wrecked, the house served
was basically a countdown timer. Yeah. It served as to drive forward.
I thought it was more than that. I mean, I'm very hamstrung in what I want, the points I want to make.
We're going to move into spoilers in just a minute.
No, you do your thing. And
I'll be very quick, because most of the points that I'm going to say have actually been said. I actually think it is probably my second favorite Pixar film so far.
What's your first?
My first is WALL-E. I think WALL-E is extraordinary.
Without question.
Extraordinary.
I want to see it.
And I would put up in the same stratosphere as I would put The Incredibles, which I also absolutely adore. Love The Incredibles. Don't get me wrong, though, because this is going to sound really odd saying these are my favorites. I love all the Pixar films. I think A Bug's Life and Cars are their two weakest.
Yes. Mm.
But their weakest is still better than most people's good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And I think with the animation in this film and with the 3D, once again Pixar has done what they always do, which is everybody releases 3D animated films throughout the year. When I say 3D, I'm talking about CG, not 3D as in third dimension.
Yeah.
We used to refer to CG as 3D, and now we're blurring the line here. they all release their CG rendered films throughout the year, and they get better and better and better. Last year, of course, Kung Fu Panda came out, and we all went, wow, they've out-Pixar'd Pixar. And then WALL-E came out and basically said, you think that's outdoing us? Here's a new bar to set, you know? And they've done it again this year. I mean, no matter what anybody else has released this year in computer animation, Pixar ups the bar. Mm-hmm. I mean, their animation is stunning. They were the people who basically invented things like hair movement systems for things like Monsters Incorporated.
All the fur and water and snow.
They're just phenomenal at what they do. Even though their characters are always very exaggerated, as in with his big head and everything else, you buy him because their characters have life. Where Robert Zemeckis does full motion capture, we talked about this last week, Robert Zemeckis does full motion capture with films like Beowulf, which are now supposed to be realistic because they're a real person.
Although it pines in the ass.
But they don't, and they've got dead eyes. Never once did you not feel the emotion from any of these characters. Their eyes were alive. They felt like they had heart and soul behind them. Pixar is remarkable at this.
Beowulf and Polar Express are creepy.
And we saw the trailer last night, when we saw this 2 days ago, for A Christmas Carol, which is more of the same. Once again, Zemeckis gets a little bit better with each of his films because technology moves up, but it still doesn't look right. It just doesn't look right.
You're right.
You know, and the Pixar boys are brilliant at storytelling. They are brilliant at concocting their stories. They tell a story that is going to appeal to themselves. That's why it works for everybody else. You know what I mean? They basically don't put it out the door for a cheap laugh. They put it out the door because they say, will this work? And if it doesn't make them laugh, it doesn't make them carry the story through, they're not going to put it out to the rest of the world. And I really admire that. I also really admire the fact that they only produce one film a year. They don't try and push out dozens of films. They rely on quality alone, and they just keep going and doing what they're doing.
Well, it's working.
And it works. And I would say to everybody, I highly recommend this film. But once again, I've got to say, when it comes to 3D, Coraline set the bar very high. I think Up has set the bar higher again. I think that the 3D work, this is Pixar's first attempt at 3D, and I think that they established their mark very, very early on and basically said, you want to see 3D? This is 3D, you know, and they've basically given us all this depth to it. I mean, the house going through the cityscape in the opening scenes, when it first starts to take flight, you feel like it's right there in the middle of the city. You know, The house has weight.
When they're pulling it with the hoses, you have a sense of that as they're moving through the
and
jungle.
And that beautiful lighting technique they use as the house is floating through the city, and you're getting the reflection of all the colors
of the balloons
on the walls. Beautifully, beautifully texture mapped. Stunning stuff. Really recommend it, and I do recommend paying the extra premium and going and seeing it in 3D.
It was made for 3D. I don't care what anybody says.
Okay, with all of that out of the way, I think we're in consensus that we all do recommend the film. Katrina probably not quite as high as us, but that's okay. Would I be accurate with that?
I think it's enjoyable. I think I actually had heard some not good reviews of it, so I actually went in not thinking, you know, so I think I enjoyed it more because I wasn't.
That's actually a good thing. I like that. Yeah, I like when that happens. All right, so with all of that being said, we're going to move into spoiler territory. Now, I don't have a spoiler bumper. We should have a spoiler bumper, like a siren or something.
That should be like a police line you cross.
Spoilers for Up. For the Americans, this isn't really spoilers because you guys got it so many months ago. For the Australians, it is going to be spoilers. We're going to do about 10 minutes of spoilers, and that'll take us to the end of the show. We do have to wrap this up in about 10 minutes. So let's move into spoilers. It's a free-for-all. If you don't want to know the spoilers, you should stop listening right now, and we'll say goodbye to you and see you next week. If you do want to hear spoilers, stick with us. And who wants to start?
Me.
Oh, Katrina wants to start. Okay.
Okay. So his boyhood hero is this air adventurer who is in a blimp.
Donna, I guess, just throwing into the chat room. Rosebud was the sled.
You're hilarious.
All right, go on. Sorry.
So anyway, his boyhood hero supposedly comes back with a skeleton of a bird that they decide is bogus. So he says, you know, blow you, I'm going back to find the real thing, and he's never seen again. So in the interval between when the main character, Mr. Fredrickson, it goes from being what seems to be a 5 or 6-year-old boy to being an old man whose wife has passed away, he meets him in the South American jungles, and there doesn't seem to be a big age difference between them. I mean, that was twaddle.
Well, no, because I think that once you get to a certain age, of course, it's harder to distinguish the age difference. But I think if you judge the difference, if you say that Mr. Fredrickson is what? How old were we saying?
10. I'm going with 10. He could easily have been 10.
No, I'm talking about now in the film.
Oh, 60.
75? 60?
No way. God, how many old people do you know? I've watched more old people than you've obviously talked to. The thing is, he probably, I reckon, 775.
All right, 775. I could easily picture that explorer as being in his 80s or possibly even into his 90s. And the reason I say that is because my lovely wife Katie's grandfather was 92 when he died, was still playing tennis, was still going out and doing all the stuff he did, and was looked about the same age as that explorer. And he was obviously going a little bit senile because he thought everybody was against him and everything. I could quite happily buy that age difference. I had no problem.
I'm just going to buy it because it's a movie.
Yeah, I had no problem with buying that he would have been in his late 80s.
I mean, if that's the worst thing we're going to pick at for this film.
Don't go hard on me because I'm disagreeing with you. Because the bottom line is, I wanted to like this movie a bit more. And what's been so good about Pixar is that even though violent things happen, I don't understand why he had to die at the end, the baddie.
Interesting point.
Because it was a lack of redemption, which is very un-Pixar.
Interesting point. Somebody ran into this scientific argument on a website I was recently reading, which was really, really funny, where they were saying that when that was originally done, when they were originally filling up the balloons in that scene, if he had got some of the better balloons that still had the most thing, they were at a very high altitude. Now, as he dropped, he had, I think, 4, 5, 6 balloons. They were saying, as he dropped, the pressure rises, which means that the helium expanded, which means he could have survived. And I was just like, yes, well saved.
Yes, from a physics perspective, but the bottom line is the implication was you're dead, buddy, fuck off. You know, to me.
Could we also say, though, that like any good action movie, he probably deserved his fate because of all the people that he had killed? Because remember, all those hats,
I appreciate that.
You know?
But as I say, that was a disappointing thing because to me,
I didn't have a problem with
that. And the other thing was the throwaway line when Mr. Fredrickson says, oh, my hero's trying to kill me. But there was no, you know, for him, I suppose I'll just jump ahead. You know when he goes through the book right at the end when he's in the house and he sees the past apart from after stuff I'm going to do, and the wife's obviously, since she got ill, put all the photos in, I'm going to cry. And what was beautiful was that he thought the adventure was going to live on that Paradise Falls or
and
whatever
it was
called.
In fact, it was just the fact that they were married.
No, their life together was the adventure, and he didn't get that. You know, and that's not an ad for marriage. It's an ad for saying grab hold of your life for where it is, which is what he did learn when he ultimately becomes a bigger part of the child's life. But for me, that was one of the most beautiful scenes in the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so I thought, and of course my therapist background was every time he fell over, I thought, oh, there goes his hip, there goes his hip, he'll snap a hip. And I thought the fact he hung on by one hand to a rail, I couldn't hang on to my body weight by one hand on a rail.
Okay, I can forgive a few of those things because it is,
anyway, like
it is a cartoon.
I like the bird.
I have to say, though, that I did get the same niggling feeling that she did towards the old guy. I'm actually with her on that. Like, I mean, it was hard for me to let that go throughout the entire scene. From when I saw him...
What, the age difference, you mean?
No, the fact that they had the spry nature of him as a character, I really didn't buy it. And it was the old guy... it was the guy that he meets more than anyone in the film. Like, I mean, the other guy I could kind of buy. We had to keep him throughout.
But don't
the
we love that scene where they go to sword fight each other and both their backs go out?
Yeah, absolutely. That was funny.
This is beautiful.
I mean, maybe it's a little bit of a fault on Pixar. Maybe they should have made the kid a little bit older or something like that when he first ran into or started to introduce, and maybe introduce them at a later age.
Well, but he was a young, young aviator, like be really young, really money.
But see, we also don't know how old he was. I only thought he was in his 20s. He didn't look like he was much older than his 20s when he met him. He was that young 20s full of, full of vinegar
and
fire.
But then the time period got a bit weird for me. What time do you think it was set for the modern part at the, when they
were... That I couldn't pick, but then again, Pixar's films are always kind of timeless.
Yeah, that's 80s. What I thought, because the...
80s, we're saying.
I'm going with 80s because the suits guys were really suitish.
They were very Matrix, weren't they?
They were,
the glasses and the thing. That's very 80s.
Some criticism has also been leveled against this film for the little moment of violence at the beginning when he hits the guy with his cane and the guy bleeds.
But the shock value. I thought that was really important.
I really liked that. I thought that was
powerful because he shocked himself. He thought this is wrong. And to me, his own horror at his actions and the people gathering around, that was almost more the realism of violence isn't the way to solve problems than the baddie falling through the clouds and being dead.
I actually didn't have a problem with the guy falling through the clouds.
Establishes dead, though.
Sorry?
So, no. That was the thing for me.
But you don't find a body, do I?
Well, I mean, like, but that's the thing. I mean, like, until that's there, concept-wise, especially for the younger audience, they don't, they may not establish that. Like, I mean, it was actually about a minute later, as my mind was still churning over it, that I went, hang on, they basically killed him.
Yeah.
And that was the thing. Like, it skipped past me. And a young kid's not even going to be thinking of that. They're going to be moving on.
But no, I talked to my sister about it, and I said, you know, we talked about, well, you know, obviously how violent are cartoons. I said, well, you know, how scary was the bloody Queen in Snow White?
Absolutely.
And she turns into full witch mode, and she doesn't get redeemed. I was trying to get some, like, you know, levelling from films we would have seen as kids.
Look, the guy was trying to kill Kevin the Bird. He was trying to kill
He wasn't
Ferguson.
Trying to kill Kevin the Bird. He wanted to keep him alive to prove that was a real bird.
Stealing him away from the kids and everything. And, you know, eventually Kevin is going to be, he's going to suffer for this. So he wants to make Kevin the Bird suffer is what he wants to do. Mm. Whether, for whatever reasons it might be, he may not think he is, but that's what he's doing. And in that pursuit, he is killing anybody that comes near him because he thinks that they are all rivals. Mm. This guy is unredeemable. Mm. He's out there too late. He has been out there too long. He has lost his mind.
Yeah, I didn't say he wasn't crazy. Yeah. And I'm not saying he's then going to pop out and buy a game to work on while he's waiting for the next person. I don't see
a resolution to this other than, I mean...
He could have been left with his dogs to look after him.
No, I don't see that happening.
No, I don't see that
There wouldn't have been satisfying
followed,
to the ending in
well,
any
like,
way.
Well, like, I mean, he would have followed that beast. He would have followed, you know, that creature until the day he dies.
Also, and yeah, and let's also have a look at, okay, so we have a PG-rated film, okay?
Yes.
It's a PG-rated film. In equivalent PG-rated films, we have Darth Maul being cut, sliced in half and falling down a pit. We have in a PG-rated film, the Emperor being thrown down a pit in Star Wars Episode 4.
He wasn't cut in half, and he had electrical things coming out of his hands.
But he was still thrown down a pit to blow up. We have the bad guy in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom being thrown down and his head scraping against the cliff as he went all the way down. And let's also not forget about the heart being ripped out of the chest.
Temple of Doom, I think, is its own genre altogether. I'm realizing, I'm aware of the time.
It was a PG-rated family film.
It was a fucking awful film, but it was still PG-rated. It was so violent. Well, I didn't make this.
And if we really want to go, if we really want to get back into history here, and it's been re-rated since, but in the original release of Jaws in 1974, that was rated PG, and we saw Quint get fall into the mouth of the shark and get munched. So, but that's now since been re-rated M. Well, guys, we got to move on. I got to say that there are many things we could talk about Up. We could really keep going on Up for another half an hour, I think, because there are so many good ones. I will say that I love the dog and I love the collar. I love Doug. I thought Doug was fabulous with the whole "I do not like the cone of shame."
I loved the dog and the what do you call it? Continuing gag about squirrel.
That was hilarious. And then the dogs go, "I hate squirrels." Yeah. All right, but unfortunately we have hit the 2-hour mark and we have to move on. So I'm just going to say thank you to everybody in the chat room for joining us. Just a reminder that if you want to leave feedback on, if you disagree or agree with any of our takes on any of this, you can leave us a feedback at feedback@geekactually.com. My God, that's a mouthful. I got to reword that. You can always catch up with any back episodes of Geek Actually, the audio podcast, which is what this is originally intended to be, at geekactually.com. You can follow me at twitter.com/DaveMcVeigh, or you can friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/DaveMcVeigh. And Katrina, is there any way people can follow you on the internet?
No, I'm in a black hole of lack of technology at the minute. But I wish you all well, and if you want to send any feedback to me, you can do it via Geek Actually.
All right, we will accept your feedback for you. And Josh, where can they find you on the internet this week?
Damn. They can find me at, I guess, Facebook would be the easiest, Facebook/GeekJosh.
Geek Josh. Okay. In the meantime, keep those comments coming into iTunes. Keep sending us feedback. Please take the survey on our website. For those who are watching live, you go to the live page on the sidebar. You'll see it actually says survey. That helps try and match us up to advertisers. Tell your friends about the show. Always nice to have more people. And please see more movies. You don't see enough movies. All of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you more next week.
And Bye. Thank you, Brad, for joining us finally.
Thank you, Brad. Nice to see you
in the chat room. We'll be right back.